Hello, I'm Wayne, and this is my Iron Maiden podcast. Sponsored by Max Factor. Giving Ma the X Factor with a range of mascaras and lip gloss. Available at Boots Chemists. Hello, I'm back again. Yeah, after another break. I hope you are too, although I suppose you must be if you're listening to this. I'm sorry if the break came as a bit of a shock, but there were a few hints in the final episodes of the Fear of the Dark series. The idea crossed my mind a while back, but then the complete failure of the 100th episode, the festival that became a fate, it made me wonder if it was all worth it. What must the listener think when I can't control an episode, with members of the public interrupting me, asking me where the tombola is, and then I go and run off early at the slightest hint that Fiona Gregory might be present? And I thought that bit might be of interest. What I thought would be a cliffhanger ending, running off to meet Fiona after all those wasted years. I thought this would be a trending topic on the Twitter. I imagined all the speculation. It's a good job I did imagine it, as there wasn't any. I thought there might be uproar at leaving on this note, with not knowing for months what happened next. I hope the listeners would write fan fiction as to what might happen with me and Fiona, like they do with characters from Harry Potter, an Australian TV soap opera, Home and Away. I don't mean erotic fan fiction, just everyday things like going to IKEA together or eating biscuits on a rainy afternoon. The Ballad of Alf did refer to this on Twitter. As a result of my silence, he hoped that she hadn't got me chained up in a cellar. This was a good start, and I got quite excited, but he didn't follow up on the story. Anyway, to all those who speculated in secret, I don't now have a girlfriend, which might be good news for some female listeners. I'm not dating Fiona. The lady at the Summer Fete wasn't Fiona. And when I ran off from the stage, and it was a stage, I got to the lady and realised it wasn't her. So I just stood there, a bit sad, and reflected for a moment, and I felt it summed up the whole day, everything going wrong. I should have gone back on stage, and it was a stage, to finish off the show, like Steve Harris would have done. But I couldn't focus, and the crowd seemed to be happier now that Bernard the Balloon Shaper was there, with his inimitable comedy and balloons routine. So a disappointing end to the Fear of the Dark series, and perhaps a disappointing start to this episode. Good news, though, we've got the X Factor album to look at. Now, it wasn't all silence during the break. When it was announced that I'd be away for a bit, there were some nice supportive comments on social media about the decision. There was no hate or death threats. Some people did comment on this 100th episode as well, which was a focus on the song Fear of the Dark, as well as the album. Ron Kramer messaged to say he was sad about the audience reaction. Well, I suppose there was some enthusiasm for Fergal, wasn't there? And despite the issues with interruptions, Joe Duncan said it might be his favourite episode, so that goes against those who were tweeting live saying that you should stay in your mum's spare bedroom. Now, Dan Cole on Facebook wondered if Pterodactyl Mark could take over for a bit, as he seems really keen. I was worried about this comment. Perhaps Dan Cole reflects the mood of the listenership, and that's what the public might want. Maybe they don't want me on my podcast. He goes on to say, not sure about listening to him for 30 minutes, though. So that's reassuring. He goes on to say, but a different frontman for a series or two seems kind of fitting for the time period. Well, he's referring here to Blaze Bayley, the frontman who replaces Bruce as singer for the remainder of the 1990s, so perhaps I should start here. Bruce Dickinson left the band, with the last live show together being on the 28th of August 1993. Even though he said on the French Message, a B-side, that Fear of the Dark was the best album the band had ever done.
Now listen, you guys, this is an amazing album that we've done. I think it's the best Iron Maiden album there's ever been.
Clearly he didn't really think this, as he'd become a bit bored. He wanted to change, and after having done a solo album, he perhaps thought he'd have more control and could try new things. It wasn't another 90s example of Iron Maiden copying Marillion, because Fish, the singer, left Marillion a few years earlier, and it wasn't connected, so stop mentioning Marillion. This was a big blow for Iron Maiden. Bruce's voice was one of the important elements that made up the trademark sound. With the two albums of the 1990s so far, they'd also seen a bit of a decline in interest. So would they give up? Now, it's hard to provide any drama to that question, because we know they're touring later this year, so obviously they didn't. but it was a question that Steve Harris probably asked. What do we do now? He might have said, looking in the mirror, or at a band meeting. Apparently, it was Dave Morey who put his arm round him and gave him a pep talk, and they carried on. Now, this might have been the Dave Morey fact of the week, but what Dave actually said was too rude for a family podcast. Now, I'm sure I'll go into more about this change and this event, but they replaced Bruce with Blaze Bailey, and he was the singer from Wolfsbane, a band who'd supported them on the No Prayer for the Road tour. Now, Blaze Bailey was from Birmingham, and if I'd known they were going to appoint someone from Birmingham, then I might have auditioned. You might recall my experience in the band Metal Ghost around that time. Maybe if I'd applied, we'd have had songs like Haunted Arcade on the X Factor. Sadly, in reality, I know I wouldn't have applied at the time, even if I'd known they might go for someone from Birmingham, because my confidence was still shaken after the failed audition for Oliver at the Birmingham Hippodrome a few years earlier. Now, you could look at this decision to recruit Blaze Bailey as a risky one. How can someone replace Bruce? Now, recently, I spoke to someone who might know about bands replacing singers, although that hadn't happened yet in his timeline. Yes, that's right. Poor Deano turned up outside my house again, just in time for a new series. That's convenient, isn't it? So here's what we talked about at the CAF.
Well, it's nice to be back.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? I think people will be pleased the podcast back.
Nah, I mean, it's CAF. Look at all those cakes.
Oh, yeah, okay. So how did you feel when you found out there was another singer in Iron Maiden's history? Or future in your case?
Well, I was interested. I was quite pleased, actually. Moving on to Aurora Vocal after all that showing off business from Bruce. I was hoping they'd sacked him, but it seems like it was his decision. Moving forward again to the 21st century, I was disappointed he came back again, like a bad penny. Do your listeners know this? I don't want to give them any spoilers for your show.
Well, I should do.
It's strange he keeps going on about these stories in interviews, how they replace the singers. It's usual arrogant rubbish. Did you read the interview where he was surprised they replaced him with Blaze? As if to say, how could they replace me with someone so inferior? How can he sing the songs I did live? Typical arrogance. All convenient hindsight, of course. He'd probably go on about it on his spoken word tour. As if nobody's heard how he told Rod he'd be nothing like the last singer, which was me, of course. What a div.
Steady on. You are aware that you meet up with Steve in 2022. There are some nice pictures. You don't want to ruin that by being rude.
Nah, I'm glad for Steve, how his band's gone on, despite all the changes. Still successful. It's nice to do another tour. Time travel theme, of course. Days of Future Past tour. I thought I'd launch some of my own merchandise to tie in with it. Look at this T-shirt I'm wearing.
Deano of Future Past?
Yeah, it's got my face on it. All the dates I've visited on the back. It's like a band tour, but with dates centuries apart. The Old West, Elvis concerts. School Nativity 1971.
No, I don't like it.
Yeah, I should have known.
Yeah, I suppose you should.
I was going to give you a pencil with it on. Anyway, you can have this.
What is it?
A VHS tape I found in the 90s. You should watch it. It might be of interest for your listeners.
Listener. I remember seeing pictures at the time of the new lineup with Blaze in it and no Bruce. I saw that Blaze looked a bit younger than the rest of the band, or so I thought. He seemed fresh-faced and keen to impress. Like me, on my first day at big boy school. I thought looking at him, that he might be some eye candy for the female fans. I showed a photo of him to my mum, but she wasn't interested. So it's a pretty big change, and maybe more time should be spent on it. But you're here for the song Sign of the Cross, which is track one on the X Factor album. Now first of all, let's look at the title. With all this change going on, it's nice of Steve Harris to reassure us with the title. He's given us something familiar, a song with of the in the title. Sign of the Cross. Like Phantom of the Opera, Children of the Damned, Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner, Fear of the Dark. Now I'm not going to waste time on the podcast listing all the songs to date with of the in the title. But it's a nice format to help us adjust to this new era. Change can be hard, and in 1995, there were lots of changes I had to deal with. Not just puberty, but this was the time of some important exams at school. Maybe I'll talk about this with Trevor later. So yeah, Sign of the Cross. It's like a Catholic gesture to show faith in God. And some of those footballers do it sometimes. It's a cross like a plus, the one Jesus died on. Not a cross like you get on your mock history GCSE exam, which I don't want to talk about. You can do this sign of the cross with your fingers if you put them together. Perhaps if you want to stop vampires from getting you. Or maybe Trevor uses it if a goth approaches him. The song starts with this pad sound. It's a bit like Heaven Can Wait. But it's also got the drama of that opening section on Power Slave. And you may remember that I tried to recreate this. And then the song becomes ethereal, and I get quite excited, because if you thought Bruce was operatic, then Blaze sounds like a choir. Listen to this. As the song carries on, I realise that it might not actually be Blaze doing it. It's clearly a voice and not a choir pad on a synth like on Seventh Son of a Seventh Son. It sounds like monks. Monks singing, which is appropriate. A Sign of the Cross is about a book called The Name of the Rose by Umberto Eco, which is about some monks. Now, I'm sure I've pronounced his name right, and I know I've done that wrong in the past, haven't I? And I apologise that I said that The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner was written by Alan Sillitoes. That wasn't right. So I've made an effort there, so hopefully there'll be no complaints about this. The Name of the Rose, as a book, is a murder mystery, so it's a bit like Midsummer Murders. Now, I wanted to do another clever rhyme. You might remember in Murders in the Rue Morgue, I talked about that being a murder mystery set in France, and I came up with this amazing rhyme, which was, "It's more patisserie than cream tea." And I mentioned it a few times, but didn't really get any credit for it. So what I've done here is I've not come up with a new updated version of it for this murder mystery. And it's not because I couldn't think of anything. It's just because you don't deserve it. So it's got this nice vibe, hasn't it, at the beginning? This ominous guitar, the monks. It sounds decent. But then we hear some singing, and it's quite a low voice, quite low in the mix as well. Come on, Blaze, let's hear ya. But I suppose it being quiet adds to the intent of the song. A living sends me shrouded men, silhouettes stand against the sky. And then we hear some lyrics. It says, 11 saintly shrouded men. That's all right, isn't it? It sounds mysterious. Now, you're probably going to say, come on, Wayne. This is just like many Nordic fighting men, isn't it? Saintly shrouded men. Why not just say 11 monks? But no, I think maybe I was a bit older and appreciated it a bit more, being poetic. Although nothing that follows rhymes with men. So maybe the choir that's singing has 11 men, saintly shrouded. It then says, silhouettes stand against the sky. So Steve Harris, who wrote these lyrics, he's like almost painting a picture. Then he says, one in front with a cross held high. And this makes some people think there are actually 12 men, which links to the apostles in the Bible. It's also been pointed out that these lyrics are similar to those in Supper's Ready by Genesis, who are a band that Steve Harris likes. And he actually listed this song in an article called 8 Songs That Changed My Life. I wonder why he chose 8. That's a strange number, isn't it? In the Genesis song, they say 6 saintly shrouded men, and it's the 7th who's got a cross held high. So you might think this is just copying. But one thing we've learned over this podcast from Trevor is this might actually be an illusion. Then we get this bit that's a bit like Alexander the Great, but with quieter military-like drums. Remember the link with the bolero? And it's the bass that almost does the rhythm. It's like a chime, like a gong on the bass guitar. So I wonder what Blaze is doing during this section. I feel like we don't know him well enough yet. He might just be swaying. Then the song kicks in and we get Blaze singing. Standing alone in the wind and rain, feeling the fear that is growing, sensing a change in the tide of air, by the storm that is brewing. Now his voice might take some getting used to, because we're so used to Bruce. And this is different. It's a bit snarly. And maybe the fact that it isn't Bruce might put some fans off immediately, without giving him a chance. And the first impression is that it's a bit growly. And you may recall I didn't like Bruce's rasp on previous albums. And I hadn't heard Wolfsbane, so I didn't know what to expect. Now, I don't think they should have got a singer just like the old one. There was some talk of other singers who have auditioned, but it's good that they're trying to develop and change a bit, like Black Sabbath and Queen and Marillion. Maybe this was a risk too far, though, in 1995, when heavy metal was getting less popular in the wake of the post-grunge landscape and now Britpop. The verses go on a bit without much variety, so you've got to focus on the words, because the rhythm of the words is quite repetitive. It says, standing alone in the wind and rain, feeling the fear that is growing. In fact, the melody is quite folky.
Standing alone in the wind and rain, feeling the fear that is growing. Sensing the change in the tide again, caught by the storm that is brewing.
The lyrics in the verse, a bit like a similar theme to Hallowed Be Thy Name, where faith's put to the test. And it seems like this is the Inquisition period. And there's this believer questioning things. You know, there's the mention of doubt. But there's also the element of fate, you know, with the line, nothing to do but await what is coming. After this, there's a new section where there's a gap after the lyrics with a bit of music. And this is a couple of lines before the chorus.
Stay in the pairs when the moment comes. Every penance to pay when this judgment day.
It's like a lead into the chorus. And the chorus, it just says, the sign of the cross. But it holds the note of cross. And it does it without any showy vibrato.
Sign of the cross, the name of the Lord.
But because it holds the note, you might think he probably should have used vibrato later on the album, and that might disguise where he may go flat. Vibrato is a rapidly repeated slight change in the pitch of a musical note. So we could have done this. The sign of the cross. But it'd have probably done it better than that. But it means that it's easy to hold the note. After the chorus, there's a guitar break. It sounds a bit like it's on strings, like cellos and violins. I mean, it sounds a bit synthetic, but it would have been quite nice to have an orchestra backing this up. I'm not sure about the snare sound though, which ruins it a bit. And then there's a breakdown, which sounds like it's got a bit too much space in it. I'd like it to be a bit bigger, because the idea's good, but it sounds a bit weak. I feel like the synth's a bit too prominent here. There's some nice acoustic strums though. And then we get this quiet bit. It's like someone's tiptoeing and then hiding in the cloisters. You know, and you might remember there was a tiptoeing bit in Wasting Love that I mentioned. Maybe here, someone's tiptoeing about, trying to hide from the monks. Yeah, so like, tiptoe, tiptoe, shh. Or the monks. Tiptoe, tiptoe. Not other monks, watch out. Tiptoe, tiptoe. Shh. Stop. Tiptoe. Oh, watch out, monks. So this instrumental passage is good. There's lots of changes. So Iron Maiden are back. You might wonder what Blaze might be doing in the studio during this bit. I mean, I don't think he was travelling through time. He's probably just sat in a chair waiting for his parts. Then we've got this chuggy orchestral bit, which is quite good because there's almost two contrasting parts that go against each other, which makes it sound like it's quite awkward in its time signature. But I don't think it is. But they put them together, so it's quite hard to dance to. So, yeah. If you can dance to this, let me know what you do. So, yeah, this different timing, it makes things seem a bit proggy. Maybe we've not seen that in the last two albums. So yeah, I think the synths again don't help in this section. Makes it even harder to dance to. So yeah, you might have to jolt a bit or do some mime. So it's quite exciting. We've already had 7 minutes of the song, that is. I'm conscious this podcast's been longer than that. Now this is the longest song we've had since, Fear of the Dark, I suppose. But yeah, Then it slows down. You know, I'm not sure how interesting this bit is. Maybe I have to be in the mood. But it does sound like a sort of good backing that somebody might be watching. So you might have to picture a scene. Then we get some solos. Cool, still carries on. Dave and Yannick have a blast, and already this seems fresher than most of Fear of the Dark album. There's some nice tom fills as well. So if you've been following the podcast, you'll probably know that I quite like the songs where there are long sections with no vocals. You know, Where Eagles Dare, Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, Hallowed Be Thy Name. So yeah, you might think I like this song as well. And yeah, I do. In fact, talking of Hallowed Be Thy Name, I think the lead out of this passage does sound a bit like Hallowed Be Thy Name. It's possible that this instrumental section is a bit long. Maybe there is too much. Maybe they're sort of showing off this first song of this new era. And then it goes into another chorus to round off the song. There is one final bit, though, where it sort of drops out a bit. And the lyrics are, lost the love of heaven above, chose the lust of the earth below. So that's a constant thing, isn't it, with Iron Maiden? That choice, good or the evil, which path will you take? And it could be this person facing the Inquisition. It could be a reference to Steve Harris, who at the time was going through a divorce. Now, there's some lust in the book, The Name of the Rose. The young monk in it has a sexual encounter. And I know this because you see boobs in the film, although this isn't one of those sections where I pressed pause on the VCR machine. So the song Sign of a Cross is 11 minutes and 16 seconds, and that's the second longest song for the band at this point in their history. Now, the album itself is nearly 71 minutes, and this is because we're in a new era where CDs dictate the length of albums and not records. So you've just heard those two figures, the song length and the album length, and I'm sure that you've all worked out that Sign of the Cross is 15.91% of the total album. Right, it's time for this.
It's time to put on your talcum powder and red leather trousers. It's time to go beyond the stratosphere. Fringe in your eyes, frayed bento's pies, in a world full of magic. So don't you stray when you reach the stratosphere. It's time to go beyond the stratosphere. It's time to go beyond the stratosphere. La 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 la.
Hello, Wayne. Dennis Stratton here. Well, we're in the mid-90s now. I was in my 40s. The naughty 40s, I wish. Probably the age that you are now. If only I had podcasts in the 1990s. We had The Big Breakfast on Channel 4. Entertainment was changing all around us. And near the end of the 90s, I had a CD-ROM. Carol Vorderman's Guide to the Internet. The World Wide Web. It came with a book with Carol's face on it. I still look at it. On the 2000 edition, she had a different haircut, like Monica out of Friends. And then another one in 2001. I couldn't keep up. I asked Jeeves if I should buy it, but he didn't answer. You might be thinking he was my butler, Wayne, but he was a search engine. I couldn't afford a butler or even a cleaner in those days. I wonder what your hair was like in the late 90s, Wayne. I enjoyed hearing how you went from a mullet to a fashionable step cut just as grunge kicked in. You'll know that I was working with Paul Di'Anno around this time, the original Iron Men. If I'd known about the Mars bars at the Drill Hall in Lincoln at that time, then I might have been less accommodating. I look forward to hearing what you've got planned for this new era of Iron Maiden. And I'm sure I'll be sending some of my thoughts now and again. Look after yourself. Take care, Dennis.
Now, the song's been played quite a lot. In fact, it's the most played song from this era. But despite opening the album, it didn't open the tour. So that's interesting. It has appeared on two live albums, Rock in Rio and Knights of the Dead. On both of these albums, it's Bruce singing, of course, which will, you know, create some discussion. Who sings the song better? Now, of course, Bruce is technically better, so that's one for the purists. But I think the album version should have extra merit because that's how it was recorded. And I have similar views about Remember Tomorrow and Sanctuary, where I'd rather hear Paul Di'Anno singing them. Now, it was actually a single for the more recent live album, but more of a pre-release as a taster. But I think most people would agree that the version on Rock in Rio is better. I mean, it's a better sound all round, with some good crowd noise. Although, I noticed that the Rio crowd clap out of time near the beginning, which is a bit annoying. Right, I'm going to give Trevor a ring.
Hiya, Wayne.
Hi, Trevor. Long time no speak.
What?
Long time no speak.
What do you mean?
Well, it's been a while, hasn't it, since we spoke?
I just saw you the other day.
Yeah, but I meant for the listener, because, you know, we haven't spoke for a while to them. So, I thought it'd be a nice opening, but, yeah, maybe not.
Oh, okay. Well, Happy New Year to the listeners. I'm sure we've already done that, though, Wayne, in the intro.
No, I haven't. But, yeah, I suppose, yeah, New Year, isn't it? New era for the podcast. Again.
Great, yeah. Well, is this the start of the podcast? Have you called me early for the full show?
Oh, no, I haven't. I've already done quite a bit.
Oh, well, I thought it might be like another comeback special.
No, it's just a regular episode. Although there's a bit of comeback, you know, the gap, got to explain what's been going on. So, yeah, I'm sure we'll do that in a moment.
Oh, right. Well, I'm not sure why you're still phoning. We're well beyond the pandemic now, aren't we? And, well, we met up at the festival. Surely we don't need to be on the phone anymore.
Nah, I think people don't like change, do they? I think, yeah, keep it as it was. I mean, you know, you see what happens here, can't you, with a new singer, Blaze Bailey.
Yeah, right.
So what have you been doing in the break, then?
I told you the other day, didn't I?
Yeah, but I'm asking for the listener. They don't know, do they?
Well, okay, yeah. Well, I've been listening to Iron Maiden.
Yeah?
Yeah, done all sorts of stuff. Not just listening to Iron Maiden. I've been doing scratch cards.
Scratch cards?
Yeah, been struggling, so, you know, cost of living and that. So looking to win big.
Okay, well, surely you're spending money on scratch cards. That's not helping, is it?
Well, yeah, but maybe if I win, I can do my own podcast or a poetry tour.
Steady on.
Yeah, I've got an idea.
What is it?
Like doing a Trevor Investigates podcast.
Trevor Investigates?
Yeah.
What are you going to investigate? Like paranormal things or conspiracy theories?
No, just different bands. I think I've been listening to Taylor Swift lately, so I could do a podcast about her. Trevor Investigates.
What, like Trevor Investigates Taylor Swift?
Yeah.
Tits?
There's no need for that.
No, I meant that Trevor Investigates Taylor Swift. That spells out tits.
Well, not everything has to be an acronym, does it? We've had this before, just as yours is. Anyway, she's revealed what her favourite Iron Maiden album is, so it is quite relevant to this podcast.
Has she? What is it?
Listen to this. Peace of
mind. All right. Interesting choice.
Yeah, well, I've been listening to her as well as Iron Maiden. I was hoping to get the social media team on the case to see if Fergal from Fecky Metal would be interested in like a mashup podcast involving Iron Maiden and Taylor Swift.
Okay.
Yeah, kept sending him hints on Twitter. He was wearing a purple t-shirt, so I mentioned Lavender Haze, one of her songs. And then later on, he said he wasn't in the mood for podcasts, so I told him to Shake It Off, another one of her songs.
Well, all right. Well, couldn't you just have asked him directly if he wanted to do one?
Yeah, maybe. He was quite popular in Stetchford, wasn't he? The last episode.
Yeah, right. Well, anyway, once again, there's been some big news, hasn't there, for Iron Maiden, while we've been on a break. Last time we were off, we had Senjutsu released, And now I've had the news of a new tour. So, yeah, I've had some messages saying, can we go on another break, please, so we can have some more Iron Maiden exclusives. Well, we've only been back 5 minutes. No need for that, is there? What do you think about the new tour, then? Days of Future Past?
Yeah, I like it. Two good albums. Nice mashup, like Iron Maiden and Taylor Swift on a podcast.
All right, stop going on about that, please. Well, I suppose it's an interesting mix. They can play new stuff and some classic stuff, but specific classic stuff, and I like that. I also like the fact that Die With Your Boots On might not be in the set.
Yeah, well, it shouldn't be, should it?
No. I mean, I can cope with songs off Senjutsu, even the ones I'm not so sure about, because they're not Die With Your Boots On. I mean, yeah, they probably won't mix it up too much, will they? They'll probably keep some of the standards and the ones they've been playing lately. But looking at the recent set, I think they might replace the Clansman, because I feel that Death of the Celts, a newer song, sounds a bit like it. I may have said that before, and yeah, it's quite a good observation. What do you think of the older songs? You know, like the ones off Somewhere in Time? What do you think they'll play?
Well, I'm not sure they'll go too out there with it. People are talking about Sea of Madness, and that'll be a treat. But they did play that at the time, so it won't be that much of an exclusive, unlike Alexander the Great, which everyone goes on about.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll play The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner either. They played that once. Didn't work, did it?
Yeah, well, Nico fell off the drum kit, didn't I? Remember?
What's he doing?
Oh, yeah.
So, anyone interested, me and Trevor are going to the Birmingham show. So that'll be fun, won't it?
Yeah, first Iron Maiden gig together for ages. Do you think we should have another Win Prevent in Birmingham? Maybe by the town hall on the day of the gig? We could ask the council.
No, I don't think so. Not after last time, anyway. Anyway, we're here to talk about Sign of the Cross for this episode. So, what do you think about the song?
Yeah, I like it.
Okay.
I think it's nice to have an epic at the start of an album instead of the end, and that's quite a bold move for Iron Maiden in this new era.
Have you read the book, The Name of the Rose? It's by Umberto Eco.
Yeah, I know. Well, I have read it, but I wasn't too bothered. I mean, it's clearly a good book, and it's important, and I quite like him as a writer, but I think I might have liked it more if I'd read it a long time ago. I'm not as keen these days.
Okay.
It's strange that they use a book by him at this point in their career, because I imagine Bruce would like his books, because they've got the shared interest in semiotics, of course.
So what did you think of Blaze's voice at the time?
Well, yeah, I wasn't too keen at first. I thought it could have been stronger, but that's because what we were used to. I'm quite happy they changed styles, makes it interesting.
Yeah, it's a good idea, I suppose.
Maybe I'll change my voice for the poetry in this series.
No, please don't. Have you got a poem this week, in your own voice?
Yeah. Here we go. The shake of a head, the words unsaid. I can tell by your frown, I've let you down. Disappointed eyes, regretful sighs, and tired tutting over squirrel nutkin.
Okay, is that it then? So, no new era for your poetry, same old stuff?
Yeah, well, that is it. Of course, people will be aware it's about the broken ornament.
What, your dad's special ornament?
Yeah.
So that was Squirrel Nutkin then?
Yeah, from the Beatrix Potter series. It's disappointing. I was playing snooker. I'm a Woolworth snooker table. And I bent over with a cue on my Woolworth snooker table. And I sort of swished. I don't know what you do with a cue. You sort of swish it, don't you? Backwards and forwards before you hit the ball. And then I've swished it too far back and it knocked it off the mantelpiece. And then, yeah, bits all over the floor and some on the Woolworth snooker table.
Why do you keep saying Woolworths?
And, you know, listeners might remember that I had to go and hide in the bath because I was worried about what my dad might say. I think that was in the Fugitive episode.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah. So what's it got to do with this song then? And what's it got to do with monks?
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with monks, but my dad had signs that he was cross. I mentioned them, the frowns, the disappointment, tutting.
Okay, well, yeah, not perhaps what I expected, but there we go. Or maybe that is what I expect. I've no idea anymore. Now, notice that book, The Name of the Rose, was published in England in 1983. That's quite a long time before this album. So why didn't he include it on the Power Slave album?
I don't know. Well, maybe it wasn't about the book. Maybe it was the film.
Yeah, but that was 1986. So, yeah, there's a bit of a gap there. I mean, we did learn, didn't we, in a Steve Harris's diary that he has book and film titles in a hat that he draws out for each album. So maybe he had The Name of the Rose or The Sign of the Cross in the hat for previous albums and just didn't come out till this point. Now, I know a lot of you will be thinking, well, what were you doing in 1995, Wayne? And maybe you want to know what Trevor did as well, because, you know, there's been a gap, hasn't there, since the last album, in terms of years between the releases and months between episodes of this podcast. So, yeah, well, 1995, I mean, really, we were sort of finishing school, we're getting to the end of it, big boy school, and there were exams and stuff, and a few people were thinking about going to college to do some more exams, you know, even Caroline Blissett. Now, at this point, we had part-time jobs, which was quite exciting. Trevor, you worked in a bookmaker's, didn't you? The William Hill, near the Fox and Goose pub.
Yeah, it's quite good there. Had a tea and coffee machine. I liked it.
It's probably good, though, that you weren't there long, were you? Because your theory of probability, that was quite confusing for the punters.
Well, yeah, well, I didn't understand the odds, so probably best I moved on. I mean, nowadays, they'd all have computers, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I suppose. Now, I had a job with Betterware, and they were a company that sold useful household products, like multi-purpose scissors, or jar and bottle openers, or plastic containers. And they were all in this catalogue that I used to deliver personally to the residents of Stechford. I'd knock on the door and told people what I was doing. I didn't just post it through the letterbox. I'd say, "Hello, I'm Wayne, and this is your Betterware catalogue. I'll come and pick it up on Wednesday." This was good customer service, and I like to think I became a local celebrity, Wayne the Betterware Man. Do you remember this, Trevor?
Yeah, I do. It was a bit embarrassing, actually.
No, it wasn't. Your mum used to order loads of stuff. All those plastic storage boxes for cereals.
Yeah, well, she never used them. She was just being nice. They made the cereals smell funny anyway.
Well, I saw them in your kitchen when I used to come round.
Yeah, well, she used to get them out specially. And she'd say, "Oh, I just want to see the boy happy."
Well, I was happy. But now I'm not. So she used to just fill them up before I came round.
Yeah.
Okay, well, anyway. Yeah, I used to enjoy it. I used to make notes on the houses that I delivered to. I had a grid, so I'd have different symbols if there was no answer, or if they took a catalogue, or if they didn't want one. And I had extra symbols if any nice-looking females lived on the premises. When I got people's orders, I'd deliver them by putting all the carrier bags together in a large cardboard box, and I'd walk round to each of the houses and flats, because I couldn't drive yet. I also carried a float of loose change as well, but I never got mugged. I wonder what people thought if we went past on the bus. "What has that man got in those bags?" they might say. Do you remember this, Trevor? Trevor?
No.
No, I thought I was a drug dealer. That'd be quite a good disguise, wouldn't it, actually? But if you are a drug dealer and you think this is a good plan, you'll find that Betterware distributors are quite protective of their patch, so be careful if you use their trade as a ruse. Now, I didn't have a uniform, but I did wear some sensible trousers, some chinos from McKay's catalogue. Yes, it's nice that, to think back on one of the first jobs I had. Maybe I'll talk a bit more about that over the series, but I'm conscious this is going to be quite a long episode because there's a recap element as well as the song, so maybe I'll think about wrapping it up, Trevor. So, yeah, next week we've got Lord of the Flies, so that's another one about a book. So, yeah, if you could have a think about that, come up with a poem, and nice to hear from you again.
Yeah, nice to be back. So, yeah, speak soon.
Yep, yeah, I'll give you a call.
Okay, thanks, Wayne. Bye.
Okay, you can follow me on social media. I'm still in the same places: Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm still on Ko-Fi as well, and yeah, I have to put some more posts up on there, I suppose. And during the break, I did cancel some of the payments that people made to me because I felt guilty about taking money from you. I mean, it's not like you put an order in, was it? A Betterware. So you know, I wasn't delivering anything. So yeah. Ko-Fi still exists, you can still look there, there's still things to do, so yeah, promote that as well. Yeah, so that's Sign of the Cross then, good start to the album, classic song, still performed today, still popular. I'm glad it had a renaissance not so long ago on the live shows, but yeah, good start. So yeah, people moaning about the Blaze era, Can't complain so far, can we? So, yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks for coming back. Maybe you haven't come back. Maybe you've been listening, you know, on catch-up and you just, you know, seamlessly going through the episodes. There's no breaks. You're probably thinking, what's he talking about? But, yeah, look at the dates on the episodes and you'll realise it's been about 6 months. So apologies if I'm a bit raw. And hopefully you'll tune in next time for Lord of the Flies. So leave you with a bit of Sign of the Cross. So thanks for listening. Bye-bye.